Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. We are in our fourth year of this wonderful program, and every week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your personal well-being and health and our total environment, our communities, our society, the Earth. I'm a long-standing journalist of health, food, and the environment, and connecting the dots between our concerns about those and the public policies and community actions that we undertake to make a context for health and well-being. And it's not only personal health, but it's also health of our democratic institutions, because our health rests upon them. When there are severe economic problems, when there are political problems, people don't fare all that well. We have a kind of advanced technological society with many infrastructures that, as they break down or become corrupted or become subject to corrupting influences, can really work against our health. For many years, I was writing a lot of personal health advice, advising people what they can do to be proactive about health, and I woke up to the fact that we need to be proactive as a society as well, and hence I have been reporting on all these kinds of issues. For, oh, 7-8 years at this point, was the groundbreaking news cycle reporter on fracking, for example, and are now covering a host of other things. If you're a regular listener to the show, you'll notice that over the last 2 months, over the last year really, but most concentratedly over the last 2 months, I've been reporting on upcoming trade deals. And I've had a whole series of shows, and if you follow my article work and reporting, which is available on the PRN website as well as on a host of sites, Alternet, EcoWatch, TruthDig, via my Facebook page, Connecting the Dots for Health, you can follow my print reporting or my online reporting in addition to the radio work. But on this program on Connect the Dots, we've been talking very regularly about these trade deals. I call them Uber trade deals. They're not really treaties in the traditional sense, although they have been kind of branded as such, because they represent a threat to not only our democracy, but to a lot of the things that we can do to create a healthy communities and a healthy environment and healthy world. So we've been discussing those for the past 2 months, and now the deals are imminent. As we record today's show, we're expecting that they will be introduced in the Senate in the next 2 weeks, somewhere around April 13th, possibly. They've been delayed multiple times. So on today's show, you'll discover some breaking news about them, as well as what we can do to stop them in their tracks. That's what we'll be discussing with an activist leader with a new, wonderful new organization who's really been on the case about this, and we'll talk about some of the recent developments and what we can do. So I'm delighted to welcome to Connect the Dots Liz Warren. She's communications director of a terrific new outfit called People Demanding Action. And we'll learn more about that as well. And what we'll be discussing today is the really anti- or counter-democratic agenda that are built into these trade deals. And this is going to be an exciting show. So welcome to Connect the Dots, Liz Warren. So happy to have you here.
Thank you so much, Allison, and I'm happy to be here. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you're coming through loud and clear. You have been organizing around this issue and all of that. I mean, but let's kind of go back to square one, because there may be some listeners who have not heard the earlier programs, and this may be their first introduction. You know, what are these trade deals, and why should this be of concern to people who care, about democracy and care about health and the environment?
Okay, so we've got a little time to give some general background. I think anybody who is living or working in America or virtually any industrialized nation today has probably noticed that their household income has shrunk relative to what it costs to live. Mm-hmm. And there's a really great reason for that, and it is trade. And it's not just trade, it's unfair trade. We have been fighting a system that has progressively been subsidizing other governments' workers and taking American jobs and shipping them all over the world. This morning, I actually woke up, and it was kind of an interesting and opportune event for me. The President of the United Steelworkers, Mr. Girard, was on Washington Journal this morning on C-SPAN talking about this phenomenon. And, you know, while he was speaking, someone from the garment workers called in, you know, and made a point of saying, yes, probably everything you're wearing now was not made in the United States. That didn't used to be the case. You know, we all probably grew up with the look for the union label slogan. What happened was with the WTO, with NAFTA, with many of the deals that have been made going back to the Nixon era, which we'll get into that in a minute because that's when Fast Track came into vogue, this way of getting trade deals through without anybody really knowing what they're agreeing to. They were able to put in provisions that gave foreign companies preferential treatment and opened up doors for them into the United States while at the same time making it very, very difficult for American workers and American companies to compete. This created huge trade deficits. That translates into a depressed economy, that translates into lower wages for workers here, but we're then, of course, still being forced to survive in an economy that's getting tougher and tougher. So, you know, if you want to look at what's happening to our economy, these trade deals have created a huge problem. And that's basically what we're up against now is what they're calling NAFTA on steroids, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the mother of them all. This is the greatest corporate giveaway in the history of the world. And the really, really scary thing about it is that it's been in negotiations for 10 years, and the text is classified secret. Now, think about that. This is not a spy thing. You know, it sounds like a spy novel, but it's not. The President of the United States classified the negotiating text secret, which means that Congress, who, by the way, couldn't even read this thing until last year, could go to jail if they were to tell their constituents what they read in this thing. And only a handful of them have actually seen parts of it under very strict conditions, but we'll talk about that in a little bit, too. The agreement is secret. So corporate trade advisors, 600 corporations, and a handful of representatives from civil society and labor unions are given limited access. But this deal is actually being inked by a bunch of corporate trade executives and their attorneys who are putting into it provisions guaranteed to protect corporations worldwide. The idea
so
is...
Liz, let me just ask a question here.
Sure.
Why? What is in it for the corporations to take down America, to de-industrialize the country, to, you know, take the work away from American workers? Why would they want to do that?
Why would they want to do it? Good question, Allison, and it's actually a great one. There's a couple of things happening. For one thing, and it sounds awful to say, but I don't think corporations have absolutely no national loyalty. When you think about it, we're talking about global multinationals. We're talking about the banking conglomerates, and we're talking about, you know, Walmart and the real biggies that, you know, they do work the world over. And the idea is to essentially, you know, global shop for the lowest common denominator. If you can get workers to make something for 60 cents an hour in a country that has no environmental regulations and, you know, lets you frack for water anytime you want, then that's where you're going to take your business. But what's mm-hmm. even better is that if you can take the lack of regulation in that country and the low wages of those workers and make it the uniform standard that everybody else has to either conform to or die, then you've locked in, you know, your security forever. And that's what these companies are trying to do. If they mm-hmm. can ink this trade agreement, what they would be doing is making a uniform set of provisions that every partner has to agree to or pay huge fines if the corporations are losing profits. And that's mm-hmm. part of what, you know, the scary thing that, you know, we read about last week, and he asked me to talk about it, the investor state dispute settlement program. And, you know, I thought about this yesterday. ISDS, it almost sounds like ISIS. It sounds like a terror organization. And in a way, it is. It's a terrifying mm-hmm. thing. ISDS. What it basically says is that corporations will have the right to sue countries. if they feel that their profits are being threatened. So, for example, you know, you've got like the state of New York that has this great new anti-fracking law. New York, if someone wanted to come and frack there, they would sit down and just get their people on paper working out how much they could conceivably make if that law did not exist. They could then sue the state of New York, and by extension, the taxpayers of New York and maybe the entire United States of America, for whatever money they would have made if New York didn't have a fracking law. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. And this is what we are risking all over the country. I mean, we're talking about, you know, states that may have a public banking law, or they have, you know, worker protections in place, you know, and it's, you name it, you know, GMO labeling, access to affordable medicines. This opens up an opportunity for big pharma to basically say, this is what we want to charge for things. And, you know, we all know how much it costs right now for healthcare, but imagine developing nations that rely on antiretroviral drugs for their, you know, many, many people who are suffering from AIDS and HIV-related complexes. Those people will be essentially not able to get those medications because big pharma is going to be able to price fix. And so, you know, we're going to basically be seeing, you know, deaths being shopped all over the world. We're talking about the people at Nestle that want to privatize water, making the rules and saying, look, if we can't get the drinking water from these developing nations, then, you know, we're going to sue them and put them out of business. You know, it's especially tough. I mean, it's tough on America, but it's also tough on some of these smaller countries that don't have the dollars to defend the lawsuit. They basically will just become, you know, absorbed by these corporations. And American workers, you know, we're just now starting to feel the pain, I think, which is why we're waking up to it. You know, we sort of had this wonderful boom period up until maybe, you know, the mid-1990s when, you know, the post-NAFTA effects started to take effect and when Glass-Steagall was repealed, so the banking deregulation started to hit a lot of us, right, at our, you know, in our pocketbooks. And now what we're seeing is sort of what's been happening in other countries that we weren't aware of. And the corporations are now sort of, this is the crowning jewel, I think, you know, something that's been going on for a very, very, very long time. And America is sort of like, we're the last, you know, like, you know, link in the chain. If they can manage to get this past the American public without us paying attention to it, and they can get Congress to sign on, then this is it. Because the rumor has been that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is going to be the trade agreement that will set the standard for all future trade agreements to come. It has what is called a docking provision, which means that once all these countries sign on, and there's a dozen countries, and I can name them if you like, or we can send them, you know, post them on your site, but there's a dozen companies in the U.S., Latin America, the Asia-Pacific region, you know, Canada, Mexico, Australia, Brunei, Vietnam, Malaysia, a number of others, that are all going to be signing on. Other countries can join. If they want to join, they must join under the provisions that were already agreed to by the original countries. So that basically means that once this stuff is in place, it's locked in forever. There's nothing
and
you can
Congress
do about it.
And Congress can't change it either. In other words, if Congress saw it, they might want to change something. So, but if they don't see it, then it can't be changed. Now, a lot of people, you know, have a problem understanding how that could even be.
Okay.
You know, I know we've, for regular listeners, I know this is a little bit familiar territory to you, but could you explain, you know, what the whole situation is with Fast Track? Because I
sure.
know that in my reporting on this, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, Congress can change it when the provisions are known, and it's really hard to conceive of the way these deals are being pushed through without any opportunity to change, to know, to amend later. You know, let's just talk about why, you know, if this upcoming vote on Fast Track, which is what's coming to Congress, I alluded to it in the next couple of weeks, if that passes, it's basically game over for democracy. I mean, these and for many, many other things, these deals go through. Can you explain how that is for people?
Absolutely. And just to give you a little bit of background to sort of set this so that it makes sense to people who maybe haven't heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we didn't talk about, there's 29 chapters purportedly in the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. Only five of them really have anything to do with trade-related issues like tariffs and things. The rest
mm-hmm.
are simply these deregulation types of, you know, components and chapters that give corporations everything they want. So basically we're talking 20-plus chapters that are just filled with nothing but corporate. It's a corporate wish list for everything they'd like to see changed. These are things that they could not change in the law itself. These are things that the corporations have tried to get through Congress on their own merits, and because Congress knew about them and their constituents knew about them, they couldn't get them through. Okay, so that's how they flipped them into this trade language, under the radar, they thought. All right, so now that brings us up to Fast Track. And Fast Track is a mechanism that goes back to the Nixon era. It was essentially devised so that Congress would, in effect, be transferring its constitutional power to oversee trade to the executive branch. Now, think about that. And this is where, it's nice to know that we have people on the left and right united in opposing this for that very reason. This is a constitutional issue. This is an issue of U.S. sovereignty. This is an issue that if you've got, friends and neighbors who are Tea Party Republicans, they should be incensed about this. And many of the people that are working on this, alongside us, not necessarily with us, they don't agree with progressives on every issue, and that's fine. But as Americans, as citizens, we should all care about the fact that this is a misappropriation, if you will, of our governmental structure. And it's something that we should all be just yelling at the top of our lungs, wait a minute. This is not okay. Congress is being asked to essentially give the president the right, along with the U.S. Trade Representative, to go overseas and sign a deal, sight unseen, and then bring it back to Congress, who has agreed, by virtue of giving the president this fast-track authority, to do a very, very quick process and get it through. They've got 90 days start to finish in both houses of Congress. That is from, the introduction of, say, the Senate bill to the very end to approve something. They have to get it, and that includes all markups and everything. They basically have to bring it in. They've got about 20 to 22 hours to debate it, which is unheard of. There's no opportunity.
What would a typical debate time normally be?
Oh, normally they would take, like 5 days. I mean, they would have a lengthy time. They could filibuster. They could amend. Mm-hmm. I mean, a normal bill does not go through in that amount of time. I mean, you want to go to how does a bill become a law? You can go to the Congress app on your smartphone or just Google Thomas Register or Thomas.gov and you can find anything you want to find on how long it takes a normal bill to go through. It could take weeks or months or whatever, but it doesn't happen like in a matter of days with only, virtually several hours of debate, whether it takes place on one day or a couple of consecutive days. The point is the debate is limited to the point where it's virtually inconsequential. So you have very limited debate. You have no amendments. And it's an up or down vote, period. And the thing is, it's more or less a handshake deal because Congress, if they give the president fast-track authority, it's pretty much a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, here you go. They're saying, in effect, we're giving you a vote of confidence that, we think you're going to do this, so we're just going to slide this through for you when you bring it back. That's crazy. And and not only that, the fact that Congress is being asked to do this and they themselves have not been given full and unfettered access. And by that I mean the conditions under which members of Congress are even allowed to see this negotiating text is crazy. They're not invited to the negotiations. They're allowed to see stuff afterwards with, things redacted. They have to sit in a room. And you can ask, Congressman Alan Grayson from Florida was one of the most vocal because he was the first one to actually see it. And he actually wrote about it. I think there's a HuffPost article where he talked about this. And he said, I can't tell you what's in it, but what I can tell you is that what I know is it's bad. And that's all he could say, because otherwise he could go to jail. He can't constitute what he's being asked to agree to on their behalf. I mean, think about that. What does that say about this supposed democracy in which we live? It's just crazy. It's insanity. I'd be scratching my head thinking it's a bad movie if I hadn't been living with this for so long. And so, Alan Grayson pointed out, I had to sit in a room. I was not allowed to take my legislative aid with me. I was not allowed to take paper or a pencil. I wasn't able to take notes. I couldn't make a photocopy. And I wasn't allowed to discuss it with anyone. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is just nuts, really? When we think about, you know, anybody who's even worked with a member of Congress as a constituent, maybe trying to get information to them, we know that if we're trying to bring them around on something, we give it to their aides will then digest it for them, you know, highlight the important points, talk to them, because members of Congress are asked to vote on hundreds of things. They are, they are inundated with requests. But what this particular mechanism has done is said to Congress, okay, if you really want to know about this, you basically have to drop everything else you're doing or maybe engage in the Evelyn Woods speed reading dynamics course so that you can sit down and memorize everything that you've seen in thousands of pages of text and then remember everything enough to vote on it. Because you're not going to see it until just before you have to vote. I mean, so in fact, they're tying their hands. They're basically trying to put one over on Congress. It's crazy. And
is it
most
working?
Members of Congress,
I mean, is it working? How is Congress responding to this? They're kind of like going, oh, yeah, I mean, where is all of the supposed opposition to Obama? He's a foreigner. Anything he does is bad. I mean, how is that playing out with this?
Well, this is the great part. Okay, this is like their third swing at the apple since I've been involved in this process. And, you know, Representative Rosa DeLauro, who is a real firebrand, she's great, she introduced a letter and got most of the members of the Democratic Congress to sign. And last year, there was another letter that went around, actually, on the GOP side. And that was the Walter Jones Michelle Bachmann letter, which got a number of Republican signatures. Between the two, it was nearly enough to kill the bill. And then, of course, we had the election and the dynamics of the House of Representatives changed. So now we're dealing with, you know, some unknowns here. We don't know necessarily, you know, who is being persuaded and not, and we don't know, you know, which new candidates or which people have been hit up by their, you know, corporate sponsors, you know, to keep their mouth shut or something. So this is going to be a little bit of a tougher fight. The other thing that happened was there was a change in the leadership in the Senate. Harry Reid is no longer head of the Senate, and Ron Wyden, you know, who was Senate Finance Chair, is now taking, number two seat to Orrin Hatch. So that brings us to the fast-track bill. Right now, we're told that, you know, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, a Democrat, is, you know, in closed-door sessions with Orrin Hatch of Utah, talking about a fast-track bill. They're trying to hammer out the details, you know, in terms of what they're going to think is okay. We're expected to see that drop the week after Easter and Passover, so that would be somewhere around the week of the 13th. Now, what we're trying to do right now is put immense pressure on Senator Wyden to not co-sponsor this bill, because that would send a powerful message to the Democrats in the House. We really don't think we're going to win this in the Senate. We need to stop it in the House, and that's really all you need to do. You know, we've got two houses of Congress this has to go through, so you create an effective speed bump in one, you put an end to it. And if we stop fast track, then by extension, TPP will not be able to be negotiated in secret. We can bring this argument out in the open, and there's no doubt that we're going to win it. So that's where we are right now on that.
All right, let me just interject here, because you know, I have a current article on exactly this topic. Listeners, you know, you can go and read it. It's available on Truthdig. And just Google my name, Allison Rose Levy, Truthdig, and Ron Wyden. It's also on your site, for which I thank you, on the People Demanding Action site. That's peopledemandingaction.org. It's actually, as at this live show, it is the lead article. You can read more about it there, and you can send it, send this radio broadcast, send the article, especially to any of your friends or relations who are, Oregonians. It's especially important for Oregonians to, I mean, everyone can do it, right, Liz? But also Oregonians,
yes,
especially, can lean on their senator. I was talking with a friend yesterday whose daughter, adult daughter, lives in, in Oregon. And, she was saying, my daughter isn't political. You know, she doesn't like politics. That's not where her head is. I mean, I hear that kind of thing, as I'm sure you do, a lot. Why would the average person want to be concerned about this?
Well, you know, and this is a common refrain. I mean, we hear this from a lot of people. I wasn't political myself until 4 years ago.
Right. So neither was I. Yeah.
I should bring this up and say, like, you know, for years and years, I was a corporate publicist. I was a journalist, and then I was a corporate publicist. Mm-hmm. I wasn't political. But when politics comes knocking on your door in the form of, you know, an effect on your family and your life mm-hmm. and your own pocketbook and your security, then I think, you know, you can do one or two things. You can bury your head in the sand and pretend it's not there or it's going to go away. Mm-hmm. You can think, gee, other people will take care of this, you know,
mm-hmm.
or you can get involved and take responsibility for your life, because this is your life. This isn't politics anymore. This isn't some intellectual game that we are playing anymore. This isn't, gee, the big guys in Washington are in charge and we can't do anything. If I can tell people anything, it's that I was never involved in politics and now am playing, I think, a fairly critical role in helping stop this fight. And that has empowered me. And as a person and as a citizen, I find that encouraging, because if I can get involved late in life after never having been involved in politics and make a difference, anybody can do it. Anybody can do it. And you really should. If you care about your life, you know, take that time that you're spending watching Dancing with the Stars, get mm-hmm. off of your sofa and make a couple phone calls. Call your representative, write a letter to the editor. It's worth the time. It's worth the time. If you're taking any time at all, if you're taking time to research your retirement fund, if you're taking time to go to your bunco, you know, meeting, or you're, you know, involved in a neighborhood watch or something, you know, if you care enough about anything in life to get involved, this is something you really should care about, because it's not only going to affect you, but it's going to affect your children. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like to the next generation in America if we don't stop this right now. I don't know about everybody else, but I have children, and I am so concerned about what kind of a world I'm going to leave them. And this is not some sort of esoteric, you know, wrapping my arms around a tree thing. This is very real. This is about their opportunity to get a job and get paid and survive in this country and have mm-hmm. some sort of quality of life. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is it, folks. This is for all the marbles. So either get up and get involved or stop complaining if you're not happy, because we really need to step up. Everybody needs to step up. You know, those of us old enough to remember John F. Kennedy, and I was barely a child, so I have to tell you a lot about this from reading history books, but ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Well, this has come the time when we need to revisit that sentiment. We really need to get involved. This is about civic responsibility. This is about caring about the world in which we live and not simply, you know, tuning out or, you know, by sitting down in front of this couch, on the couch in front of this TV and just saying, okay, this doesn't affect me because I can still afford to buy dinner. You know, this is about saying, wait a minute, what was your life like before? What do you see happening? Unless you're in the 1% of Americans who are profiting from this downward spiral that started with the banking meltdown in the, you know, 2008, you know, chances are you've been affected. You know, the joke, you know, that a lot of my friends say, gee, my 401k became a 201k. This has something to do with it, folks, mm-hmm. because all of this loss is simply a transfer of wealth. And the transfer of wealth is being helped by these kinds of deals. You know, we can get into so many, you know, deep into the weeds arguments about, you know, corporations that are taking their profits and, you know, taking them offshore. That's a tax code loophole. But it's going to make it an awful lot easier for people to do this if these trade deals go through. And not only that, but, you know, something they can do, they can claim that they're foreign-owned companies. They can avoid paying U.S. taxes. That takes money out of our economy again. So they're forcing workers to work for less. They're taking tax dollars out of the U.S. economy. They're, you know, making us basically, you know, buy inferior goods, things that haven't been inspected. We have food safety issues now to contend with. We have medicines that we can't afford. We have our internet freedom threatened, for heaven's sakes. I mean, everything that affects your life, everything that you've come to rely upon as being normal in your life is going to change, and not for the better, if this thing happens. So, you know, jumping back a little bit into, you know, what we know about Fast Track. All right, so Fast Track is going to make Congress sign on to something that, you know, tells the president, you can make a deal, and we've got your back. We'll just sign on the dotted line. Most members of Congress who have had a chance to think about it are opposing this. The ones who aren't are the ones that either, A, are, you know, bought and paid for by the global corporate multinational conglomerates, or they simply aren't educated. We're hoping, and we're, you know, we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say most of them are the latter, because we don't want to think of every politician in America as being completely corrupt. So we want to say, you know what, maybe these guys have just been sold a bill of goods like the rest of us. We need to educate them. So, you know, there's a two-pronged approach. Number one, let's educate them. Number two, if we can't educate them, then we basically need to let them know that their jobs are on the line if they fail to serve their constituents. And with Ron Wyden, there is an aggressive campaign, and I'm loving this, and I would encourage everybody to join in and say, look, we are going to primary you in 2016 if you sponsor a fast-track bill with Orrin Hatch. You don't have to be a resident of Oregon to donate to a Senate campaign. So what we're telling people, and again, you know, again, this is civic action, so I can't really get too much into electoral politics, but I can tell you that my friends at Move On, the organization that I worked for before People Demanding Action, did a survey of their members in the state of Oregon, and nearly 80% of them agreed to support a primary challenge to Senator Wyden if he co-sponsored a fast-track bill. Think about that now. They did a survey. Nearly 80% said that they would co-sponsor a primary challenge. And that's a big deal because he's been a fairly popular senator. He has a reputation as being an environmentalist. But the thing is, no senator who says he's an environmentalist would vote for Fast Track, let alone co-sponsor a bill. And when they tell you, and this is one of the things that we're fighting, and I'll get into that next argument real quickly here, we're fighting this epic battle of words right now on the front line. There is this huge, huge propaganda campaign underway, you know, which I think is really great news, by the way, Allison. It tells us that you and others who are getting the word out are doing a great job of doing it. The grassroots organizers who are going around from, you know, neighborhood to neighborhood and getting on their local radio shows and writing letters to their editor, they're getting the word out, and they're doing it effectively enough that we've got the other side on the ropes. They aren't actually scared, and that is so amazing to me. Now, our little ragtag coalition, for lack of a better word, and I said that because they've got millions. I mean, we're talking about the, you know, global corporate multinational conglomerate of, you know, billions and billions and billions of dollars on one side, and then you've got, you know, a handful of nonprofit organizations, some labor leaders, and a bunch of volunteers on the other side. And we have them running scared. How cool is that? So that's an exciting thing.
So let me just interject here, Liz. You know, that really also shows that I think a reason that a lot of people don't get involved, you know, I think the reasons that you mentioned all are really true. I have other things going on. Someone else will do it. It won't matter anyway. Gee, this is too painful. But I think what you're reporting, and it's true, I've seen it too, because when I began reporting on this, it wasn't mentioned in the mainstream media. A lot of people said to me, oh, well, this could not possibly be true because the New York Times, where is Paul Krugman? Why are the people on MSNBC talking about a plane crash in Europe and Scientology day after day after day? You know, how come this isn't a news item? If any of the things that you were reporting were true, you know, all of this would be covered on mainstream media. It wasn't. As true to form, and like you, I was never political. In my earlier life, when I began reporting on fracking, you know, 6 years ago or whatever it was, it was basically because it kind of No one else was doing it. And I began doing the same thing here, reporting on it, because no one else was doing it. Now it is happening. We've had the WikiLeaks leak, which was reported by the New York Times. We've had stuff in the Washington Post. MSNBC, that wonderful liberal outlet, you know, aside from Ed Schultz, has been, you know, completely silent and deaf to it. But, you know, when it gets to the floor and Republicans are name-calling, then maybe they will think of it. But nevertheless, the message is getting through. More people know about it. And I think for those people who are kind of like sitting on their hands, that should encourage us to say, look, we can make a difference if we participate. And I think you cited about a million reasons why this is going to affect everybody. And right now people complain about Citizens United, as well they should. But, you know, what if these people weren't just, okay, I done Citizen United. Now I'm done. We can rest on our laurels and kind of control the democratic process through Citizens United. Okay, nothing more will continue or progress with our agenda because now we have Citizens United. Well, that isn't the way these companies think about it. That's the way you, the listeners, are thinking about it. You're thinking, exactly. Oh, well, what else could happen that would be worse? And our message to you is, this is it.
Well, yes, and by the way, just to underscore something, and I think if people take away nothing else from this program, they should remember this. They can win the fracking fight. They can win on Citizens United. They could even win on Move to Amend and get the U.S. Constitution changed. And guess what, folks? That has absolutely nothing to do with this, because this trade agreement would overrule every single law in America, including the United States Constitution, because the investor-state dispute settlement mechanism allows for decisions to be made by a tribunal of attorneys, corporate attorneys, who are not accountable to any government, and they are the last word on these disputes. These disputes involve corporations being able to sue government. That means it's the United States of America versus Exxon or Walmart or whoever. And let me tell you, we are not going to win these fights. Billions of dollars have already been awarded under settlements in WTO-related cases. And if someone wants to know more about it, I would refer them, by the way, to Public Citizen website, citizen.org. And reading, I would suggest they read Lori Wallach's book, The Rise and Fall of Fast Track Trade Authority. Lori is the undisputed expert on this. She is a trade attorney who came out of the corporate world and then left the dark side and came to the light about 20-plus years ago. She is my good friend, and she is somebody that I look to for leadership and insight because she understands all of the legal issues surrounding this particular fight, and she has been at the front of it since the very, very beginning. Long before I ever even knew about it or any of us knew about it, Lori was fighting this fight because she understood, having come out of the corporate trade area, exactly what was at stake. And I think that's what made her do it. She saw the light because she recognized as an attorney what was happening long before any of us did. And so she wrote the book literally on this and has pointed out all of the things that they're trying to sneak through. It's one of the reasons that I love reaching out to her, because she can actually identify for us, you know, the hidden meaning of some of the language. You know, if they're saying this is what they're really trying to do. So Lori is the person, she's my go-to person, she should be everyone's go-to person. Go to Public Citizen's site if you want to learn more about this, Public Citizen's Global Trade Watch. And they've also got a new site that they created specifically for ISDS-related information. I can give you that link if you want to share it with your listeners, I think, afterwards.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But let me just
share this. We're trying to get Lori on the show, too, I have to say.
Yeah,
maybe
okay.
You can help us. We'd like to get Lori on the show.
Well,
yeah.
We'll see what we can do. I'm sure she'd love to do it if she can find the time, because she's pretty much got her hands full right now, as you can imagine,
yes,
with this fight. But we'll
right.
see what we can do for you. What I will tell you, as you alluded a little bit earlier in the program, you know, there was a WikiLeaks leak of the investment chapter last week, and Public Citizen did an analysis of it. My friend Celeste Drake at the AFL-CIO did an analysis of it. Lori commented on it. Sierra Club commented on it. Other people commented on it. All of the progressive partners weighed in on specific parts of it and what it would mean to us. And that information is also available. But what's really interesting to know is that the only things we do know about this are because the things have been leaked, presumably by, you know, negotiators from other countries, because the U.S. has been beating up on them, quite frankly. You know, U.S. corporations who are sort of claiming to be foreign corporations because they own, you know, interest in foreign companies, which is another whole story for another day, but, you know, they're beating up on some of these smaller guys. And I know that, for example, more than a year ago, they had some discussions that were taking place over some of the medical and intellectual property portions of this agreement. And Stan McCoy, who was the lead U.S. negotiator, had like 24 negotiators working around the clock, and they were taking shifts, and they were, you know, able to take breaks and go and eat and sleep. And there were one or two negotiators from some of the other countries, and they were intentionally making them work around the clock so they could, in effect, break them down. I mean, it was, to me, it was almost like, you know, terror suspect tactics. They were, you know, or police tactics. They were keeping these people exhausted and hungry and worn out until they finally would just agree. And so I suspect that, you know, those are probably the folks who have supplied WikiLeaks with some of the leaked chapters, because they're recognizing how unfair some of this stuff is. But what's interesting is that these same people who, you know, are representing, you know, presumably U.S. companies, have absolutely no loyalty to U.S. workers or U.S. consumers. They don't care because they have no loyalty. They are simply looking at their own bottom line. And now they have pulled out all the stops. And we knew they pulled out all the stops when we started seeing some things, you know, hitting the media. You mentioned the fact that, you know, most of the corporate media have not talked about this. And there's a good reason for that. And I say this as a former journalist because I saw this happening. You know, when, mm-hmm. when newspapers stopped being responsible was when they started being part of global media empires. I mean, when you mm-hmm. have people like Rupert Murdoch, you know, calling the shots, journalism is no longer journalism. When you have the Koch brothers telling PBS, you can't release this documentary because it paints us in an unfavorable light, even PBS can't tell the truth. I mean, we've gotten to a point of critical mass now. It, you know, this is really an epic struggle for democracy, and we are losing it because the media is now controlled by the 600 corporate trade negotiators we're talking about. Those people that we're talking about that stand to benefit, guess what? You know, Sony's there, and, you know, NBC and ABC and CBS and the company that owns the Washington Post and the New York Times, and, you know, those people are part of the problem now. And I say that with great sadness as a former journalist. I mean,
it's hard to believe. And this is another reason why people are, you know, the thing that I keep stressing to my listeners is these folks are strategic. You know, they didn't mm-hmm. start rolling out these much worse acceleration of this whole trend as fast track and these treaties are. They didn't start rolling it out. They didn't start doing these things till they had certain things lined up, like the press in their pocket, so that people are real informed. So if you feel overwhelmed by that, you know, it is, it's terrifying. But, you know, if we just go, I mean, it's fine to cry in a corner and grieve about the loss and the coming losses of, you know, of what we have had as the American way of life. But if all you do is cry and you don't take action, then they will continue to accelerate because the other side is strategic, and their takeover of the press is part of that. I want to also quickly mention, as I do on every show, that you can always go to stopfasttrack.com, put in your zip code, and it will immediately allow you to very easily phone or email any of your representatives, the Senate, the House, and let your views be known. Very important to do that, and not only to do it once, to do it weekly. I do it, you know, you could do it every day. In the coming several weeks, do it all the time. Enter different zip codes and let other representatives know how you feel about this. You're entitled to do that. I also want to just mention as a sidebar, as I mentioned, was the first news cycle reporter regularly covering the fracking issue. I saw that Josh Fox is making his famous and Academy Award-nominated film Gasland, and there was no one reporting about it. So I sort of jumped up and became, you know, the first journalist covering it. And I did so for many, many years and participated in winning the fracking ban, which I very much do not want to see put at risk with our state subject to foreign companies suing us for millions of dollars, which we need to enforce rules for safety. They're putting in pipelines left, right, and center all across the country, all across the Northeast region. Who is going to get them properly regulated? Who's going to enforce regulations if taxpayers not only have these rules taken away by these horrible trade agreements, but also their money's taken away by these companies coming after us? Instead of them being held accountable for health or environmental harm, we're being held accountable, if these treaties passed, for their future lost profits, whatever they project that they could make, which isn't even based on reality, because a lot of these projections are wishful thinking and don't take events as they enroll over time into account. I mean, when I began covering fracking, was told by major media outlets when I pitched to them stories about this, I was reporting in Huffington and Alternate mostly, I was told this is a local story. It's not a local story. It's a national, regional story, a national story, an international story. Right now, a pipeline, one of my more recent articles, is on a gas, high-transmission gas pipeline, which has a 20% failure rate, is being routed right directly through the nuclear power plant north of New York City. That story is currently on Alternate, listeners, if you would like to read it. When I pitched that to connections at major media outlets, I was told, it's a local story. A nuclear event north of New York City is a national and global story. So this is, I'm just saying, you know, we all know they're owned, but, you know, when you're a journalist and you're knocking on the door, this is the code that you're told for we won't cover anything. And people that I've interviewed on these trade agreements who are knowledgeable experts, who were privy to the same leaks we're now talking about because of their international connections, are regularly interviewed in Europe and in this country. Reporters who want to interview them and want to cover this are told no by their editors, and they have actually told some of the very experts that I've regularly interviewed and that you can hear on Progressive Radio Network. If you go into our archives, those shows are all there and those interviews are all there. They have been told, no, we can't cover anything critical to the president or the government by major outlets. They've been told that. So, you know, don't bury your head in the sand. Cry if you need to. I sometimes do. But most important, get active. Now, I'd like to hear a little bit from you about people demanding action, because that's the upside. People are demanding action. You can be part of it. Tell us, Liz, about this new and very exciting organization that you're in a key leadership role with.
Well, thank you very much. And let me say that, you know, People Demanding Action is the new 501c4 sister organization to Progressive Democrats of America, which is a 10-year-old organization. They are a political action committee. We are their civic action arm. So we're new and we're not new. Most of the people involved are people who've been involved with other organizations. I was with Move On for 3 years before I came over to this organization. So, you know, we're new, but we're old. And what we're trying to do, and I think it sort of evolved actually from this campaign that I was, you know, sort of, you know, loosely coordinating, if you will, among allies, is bring together grassroots and grasstop leaders and partner them with progressive allied organizations, both at the local, state, or the, well, I say both at the local, state, and national level. So by that I mean We're trying to facilitate engagement. We're trying to give people who want to work on an issue connections to other people working on the issue. And we're trying to be a good partner and a good neighbor, if you will, to other progressive organizations who are focusing on particular issues. So if someone is leading on an issue, we're going to try and rally support for that issue, whether
That's
it's
great.
Tracking or Move to Amend or TPP or whatever. You know, I'm personally very committed to TPP because it's been my baby for so long and because I actually think that it's the grandfather issue. It's the one that's going to affect everything else. So I'll probably stay on this issue until we win or I die, whichever comes first. But, you know, we are focusing on other issues. We are getting very involved in civil rights, and that sounds hilarious, right, in the, you know, millennium right now that we're discussing civil rights, but that's a big issue. Strangely
mm-hmm.
enough, because, you know, we're looking at, you know, people who are systematically trying to affect our voting rights. And what's interesting to note, you know, first they're going after, you know, poor and minority and elderly people by, you know, trying to make them meet ridiculous requirements to have identification before they can vote, by cutting back on the times they can vote, by making it inconvenient, by making it so that, you know, church groups that used to take their buses on Sundays for early voting, now they don't have early voting, so gee, those people won't be able to get there, you know, by doing all kinds of things to eliminate the possibility of people who might vote progressive from voting. You know, these things are just a way of, once again, subverting our democracy. Because if you think about it, if they can sell us down the river with a trade agreement that makes binding requirements that overrule our national laws, and at the same time keep voters away from the polls who might actually be able to change things, and at the same time buy all of our legislators and control our media, what does that say? I mean, it paints a very, very scary picture of the future. So right now, what we have are our voices and our votes. And if we don't use them while we can, we won't have them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the important thing. And by the way, internet freedom, big part of that. Net neutrality. I mean, we just won that fight in the FCC, but we're losing it in other places. We're, you know, if we can win it in the FCC, but if we lose on TPP, then the FCC ruling is moot, like everything else, like New York's fracking law.
Let's drill into that a little bit. You know, my understanding is there are two possible avenues here. One is these international investor state dispute resolution, which is what we've been talking about. That's where a country gets hauled into court, held accountable to a corporation, judged by three corporate attorneys, and then taxpayers have to, you know, foot the bill for something that they voted in that was protective to health, the environment, the economy of that locality. You know, it sounds outrageous, you know, but it's really built into this thing. And, of course, it has a chilling effect because once they do it once they do it twice, once they do it a dozen times, whatever they, you know, think to be doing, then, you know, nobody wants – it's that much harder to ever
right.
pass anything. So that has a prohibitive effect. But I've also heard, and this is more for the European, the Atlantic Agreement, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership called the TTIP, that there will also be a kind of uber level of bureaucracy instated, and of course Americans, the U.S. would be part of that, where if you try to pass a new law, because they say it's new science about something that's harmful, new problems that surface where more people get concerned about it, basically that is also blocked by this review committee that has oversight over any law that a country might need to pass going forward. So this
they're covering their bases and they're doing it really effectively. And you know, the interesting thing about TTIP, which, you know, Public Citizen still calls TAFTA, which, you know, because it sounds like TAFTA, is that, you know, a couple of things that are interesting about Europe, you know, they ban GMOs. They have a law, the equivalent of Glass-Steagall, still in place over there.
Mm-hmm.
So the big banks, the global banking conglomerate, they want to see that agreement go through because basically, you know, Monsanto and the bankers, they want to get rid of those restrictions in Europe. You know, Europe mm-hmm. actually has better protections for people, you know, from bank failure than we do, and they have better protections in terms of, you know, food safety than we do, which is kind of mm-hmm. sad, among other things, and better wages. I mean, Germany, for example, you know, has, you know, their workers are paid 20% more, and the trade deals that they negotiate actually are fairer. So, you know, and even in, say, TPP, you know, Australia is trying to write in provisions that would exempt them from certain things. Other countries are actually trying to look out for their people in negotiating these trade deals, and the U.S. is doing the opposite. They're actually pushing for the worst-case scenario as far as the American people are concerned, and we really need to care about that. And the way that we can make sure they get the message, again, is tell them we will remember in 2016. I'm trying to start a hashtag on Twitter, you know, hashtag we will remember in 16, so that representatives are going to know they can't get away with it. They think they can get away with it if they, you know, if they're on the side of the corporations, they think they can get away with this. I think we need to let them know that, no, they can't. They can get away with it, but it's going to cost them. You know, it's going to cost them their seat in Congress, because we cannot let this happen. You know, no matter what you think about other things, you need to know that this is going to affect your economic well-being and that of your children. And finally, one of the things that I would like to offer is that you're going to be hearing and reading a lot of propaganda coming out of the White House and coming from both the supposed left and the right, saying that all these alarmists, they're crazy. They don't know what they're talking about. This is really a great deal. The reason you're going to hear that is because the same people that have been systematically dismantling our democracy have invested millions of dollars in a propaganda campaign. They hired all the people that worked on the Obama campaign, or most of them, in 2008 and 2012. The OFA alumni are actually working on this. They've got a nice little group of elves at work in social media, writing letters to the editor. They have engaged the National Chamber of Commerce to enlist its local chamber members to write letters and send messages out to their local newspapers and to their friends and neighbors saying, this isn't just the president's agreement, it's mine. He's really looking out for us, and here's what's great about it. If their representative is a Republican, they're coming out with stuff saying, here's why our representative is, you know, doing this and why it's great for you.
Liz, I need to interject here because we're coming down to sure. the end of the show. And so I just want to say before we do close out, which is very shortly, where can our listeners go to do the same thing, to write to editors, congressmen, to push back on this? Where can they go?
I'm glad you asked. Well, you gave us one good site, which is stopfasttrack.com, where they can actually reach out, send letters to Congress, and also email them and phone them. So that's one way for them to reach out to Congress via email and phone. If they want to write a letter to the editor or reach out in other ways, they can go to peopledemandingaction.org, mm-hmm. and then from our drop-down issues menu, select the Stop TPP Fast Track. It'll pull up a page which gives them a map that shows where everybody is, and it also, on the right-hand side of the page, will give you options. We've got a letter to the editor tool, and we also do calls on Sundays, which I know you're aware of, Allison. You've been on them. We are featuring different speakers. Our next call is on April 12th. There is an International Day of Action on April 18th. So, you know, the 12th is our last call before we expect the bill to drop. We do them at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 4:30 Pacific. There will be a link to the next call up probably in the next few days because it's on the 12th. We are skipping Easter Passover weekend, of course, but the 12th, the 19th, and the 26th, we have calls scheduled, and you'll be able to see a schedule of calls on that page.
That's fantastic. That's just great. Sorry to have to cut you off here, but we're about to start hearing the music soon, I'm afraid.
I was worried about filling an hour.
Yeah, no. I mean, you've been fantastic. You know, thank you so much. Listeners, you know what to do. Liz Warren, thank you for your energy, your knowledge, your enthusiasm, your smarts, your commitment to all of this, for both sharing the information and modeling that for all my listeners here on Connect the Dots. You're terrific. We'll have you back. You're great. Thank you so much for all you're doing for all of us. Thank you,
Allison, and thank you for your work.
Thank you.